Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of that galaxy and directly from ours, this is Four Center presents Other Center. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here to answer your questions of the other. We're having a lot of fun already celebrating spooky season around here, so we'll see where the questions go. Will they rattle our soul? Will they scare us? Or inform us as they inform you? We'll see. All that's coming your way here. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. I love that I just said that. Podcast, like it's some just generic term. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I have a recommendation for you if you'd like to try out a book on us. Speaking of spooky seasons, this book is by Spencer Ackerman. It's called Reign of Terror: How the 9/11 Era Destabilized America and Produced Trump. It's some light reading for your October holiday season, and you can try it out on us and support the show in the process by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. That's our Audible. Now we have our Ask, and that's where Joseph slides in here.
That is right. You two have both had great audible recommendations this week. So for next week, I'll try to complete the circuit by coming up with an important but disturbing book about real life events, because we are on a really good roll. Quickly for our ask, we've been promoting this for the last couple of weeks. We're promoting our Patreon, patreon.com/4center. People have been very supportive, but we have a new goal we're trying to get to at $2,300 a month. The three of us are going to take a field trip, and we will do some video documentation, and we will record an episode about it. And this field trip is inspired by our desserts, favorite desserts ranked episode that we did, where we discovered that we could all sample one another's favorite desserts or one of our favorite desserts, cheesecake, donuts, and pie, all by going to one physical location. Isn't that amazing? So we want to be able to go to the Grove and do that kind of special episode. This is the kind of fun stuff we've been able to discover and experiment with because of other centers. We would love to continue to experiment. That is it.
That is it indeed. A lot of fun. I cannot wait for that field trip, and it's going to happen there. You guys are going to have to shut me up, because I'm going to be like, I used to work right here at this corner. Shut up. Well, we got some questions. These are questions from our listeners or supporters online, on the various social media sites, and from Patreon. And Joseph, you've pulled some wonderful ones today. What do we got?
Yeah, and let me start with a clarification that right now we've only put out the calls on Patreon.
That's my apologies. My apologies.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Because it actually does lead us into this question. But yeah, we have honestly, to pull back the curtain. We used to post these on, Patreon and take two, questions from Patreon. And then, it was getting way too hard to track them down on various social medias. So, for a long time, there was also a thread on Twitter. And then many things have happened to Twitter, including lots of people leaving it, and like some mythical crystal that's been shattered across the lands. I feel like the social media audience is shattered everywhere. Yeah. So for right now, the ongoing post is on Patreon. If you're a patron, just scroll down and look for the picture of Ken Eaton. You're looking at fish like he's going to eat it. And he did eat it because I took the photo of him. And later he ate it. But if you have something that you'd really, really like to ask us, I'm not going to do a post for it, but feel free to reach out on the social media of your choice. You can tag 4Center, or honestly, you can tag me because I collect all the questions. And our first question actually comes from somebody who really wanted a question answered. So did exactly that, just reached out on social media and said, I don't know where you collect these questions, but I have one I need the answer to. So that actually takes us to our first question. It came to us from two different listeners, because 8984M has asked this in Patreon. It says, pardon if this has already been answered in the long history of 4Center, but what is the origin story of this wonderful podcast? What is other colon a 4Center story, if you will? So we already had that on Patreon. And then Daniel Zarlik reached out on social media and said, hi, FC friends. I'd love to know about 4Center canon. How did you three meet each other? I'd love having Jen for this one, as I want to hear everyone's point of view. Who introduced you? What circumstances? What clicked on each other? Thank you. I know Daniel meant this in a absolutely friendly way, and was limited by character count. But I also like that it comes across as we are being interviewed. Who introduced you? What circumstances? What clicked? Need answers. So thank you to both of you for asking. I think sometimes we're used to having done this podcast for a long time and having some listeners who have been with us for a long time. And it's great to remember that it's been going for 8 years. So some people don't know the origin story we've talked about. So let's dive into this. Ken, do you want to start? And then we'll roll over to Jennifer's POV.
Sure. Yeah, I do. And I yeah, you're right. We've said this in other spots. I think even other podcasts that I forget where and when. And it's, we've been going for so long. When Jennifer came back, remember, she stepped aside, for those who know, to bring a second human into the world and kind of do some other things. And when she returned, there was much rejoicing, as there should be. And I remember there were some people Discord going, this is great. I don't know who this person is. This is wonderful. So the story has been told. So I definitely want to hear your perspectives, because I feel like an annoying uncle at a party. I've told some of this stuff before, but My journey with Force Center begins. I've always wanting to kind of do my own Star Wars content, meaning I had done it, you know, once it started to become possible, the digital media world exploded and it was great. And I was producing for Schmoes and got to host the Jedi Alliance show with Maude Garrett, and which factors how I met Jen. And then the opportunity kind of existed and then meeting Joseph and seeing him on Marvel Movie News was one of the starting points. Anyways, that's all on the table. 2014, Maude Garrett and I were hosting a Jedi Alliance on the Popcorn Talk Network. Maude had to leave the show after about 29 episodes, and then I went solo for a while, but I definitely wanted a host. And when I become a producer of the Schmoes No podcast in 2012, despite being around the internet world and people kind of either big in the world or working in the world, I not really paid attention to it. And so I started around 2012, like, what's actually out there? Who's got a channel? Who's doing this content? That's when I first started listening to Hello Greedo, who had a lot of great content, and I think has changed and grown as a content producer. This little thing called Star Wars Minute, which explains quite well with this young Alex kid. And then there was a news story of a young girl who, like, at Disneyland, who refused to bow before Darth Vader or something. It was this cute story. And then someone had interviewed that girl, and someone was Jennifer Landa. And I thought, oh my God, this person's great. Exactly what we'd be looking for. I'd love to reach out. I think I reached out through a back end YouTube business email.
And so, exactly. Yes.
I said, hi, I'm so-and-so and this and that. And I remember telling my pal, Phil Svitek, I said, yeah, I think this could be a replacement for Maude. Like, we could take the show in a new and exciting direction and see what we can do here. I didn't tell Jen this. It wasn't like you're auditioning for a job. We're just like, hey, let's see what's going on. And then Jen walked in 8 3/4 pregnant.
Yes.
And not that that stops you from doing anything, but it was just like, oh, the reality is this probably isn't the time. And I ended up leaving the show shortly after. So Jen, I'll kick it back to you because, the old Scrimshaw guy, he showed up around that same time too, but you're the first perspective on my journey.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because around that time, like 2010 and 2012, and it did feel like there were a lot more Star Wars channels suddenly kind of coming up, and it was a fairly small community. And when you reached out to me, yeah, it was, I think, on my business, because I was trying to find the email and I couldn't find it. So now that you say that, it definitely was on my old business account. Mm. And you were like, you want to come on for Jedi Alliance? I was like, wow, this sounds like so much fun to get a talk about Star Wars with other people as opposed to just like by myself in my room. And I came and I was really nervous because I had never really done that type of panel situation before. And you were awesome. And Ken, you were just so friendly. It was like low stakes. And it just felt like a talk amongst friends. And that was when I was like, wow, this is great. But I was pregnant and I didn't know what was going to happen. And my life did get turned upside down.
Yeah.
And then I remember you reached out to me again. Yeah. And I remember my daughter was just a few months old. It was like in November, I think. And you're like, I'm putting together this show called Force Center, and Joseph, who I'd met, you know, we're just doing some things. We'd love to have you come on. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but it just seems like a lot of fun. And you both were so nice and so different from a lot of the other Star Wars channels, where I was kind of starting to see that some channels were going a very specific direction, a very like, shall we say, negative direction. But you two always were very positive and celebrating the fun. And I just was like, you know, you just that gut instinct where you're like, I feel like these are like-minded people. So I trusted that it was going to be okay. And you both were so nice about like, you know, we understand you have a new baby. How do we want to do this? Like, I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, let's go for it. And that was it. That was the beginning. In 2015 for me, when I joined Force Center.
Yeah, that's when we launched. I think around October 2015.
Yeah, yeah, like right before Force Awakens, and right into just the explosion of all the great Star Wars talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I think from my perspective, I had had a little bit of a career shift where I had been doing sketches at a sci-fi convention for years, but that was way separate from anything else. And then around 2010, kind of the explosion of the mm-hmm. pop culture world we have now. Suddenly, I was finding lots of gigs where people wanted stand-up that had something to do with pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I was having so much fun being like, oh, this is now a part of my career and I get to make jokes. But then I got really tired of just jokes. Like, everybody is drenched in costumes of this galaxy far, far away and got all the jokes and all the toys. But I just could not get anyone to like engage. Like, I remember particular people being like, oh, isn't it funny that we all, you know, worship this Luke guy, but he's just a wimp and a failure. I'd be like, what? Justify that, you know? And like, and people would be like, no, I want to have a drink, like, or whatever. Like, nobody, I felt like people wanted to kind of celebrate it, poke fun at it, but not dive into it at all.
Yeah.
So it never really occurred to me is anything that could be sort of career related. And then a story that listeners have heard many times before, I believe 2014, I believe right around Halloween of 2014, the convention that's now Los Angeles Comic-Con was the Stanley's Kamikaze. Maybe a good name change.
Yeah.
And our mutual friend Audrey Kearns had me on a panel with a bunch of great people. I believe it was a panel about like which woman superhero would win in a fight, or kind of like a fun ranking thing, I think. Anyway, many mutual friends on the panel met Ken afterward. A bunch of us went and had beers, and I think you were wearing a suit.
Or a suit jacket. Yeah, especially of the time. You know, if you got to go to a nerd event, I got to look like the pit boss. Branding. Yeah.
I think so. I think that stuck in my memory. And it was a really interesting time for me because I hadn't been in Los Angeles that long. This was kind of a it was fun to meet people and really try to use my instincts because I didn't know. But like, oh, a lot of people know him and he's very friendly and he seems like a great guy. And I think we talked about Star Wars a little bit. And I think you're like, hey, I got this show sometime. Mm-hmm. And then, a mutual friend, but a very old friend of yours, Matt Key, invited me to be on the Marvel show on the Popcorn Talk. And like, I did panels, but I did mostly jokey panels at conventions. Mm-hmm. The idea that people really just wanted to listen while other people sincerely talked about nerd stuff was like, what? And the Marvel show was fun, but it was my first exposure to how intense the fandom was.
Yeah.
And I think I said one thing about the superhero character Vision, which was only half accurate. It was a foggy memory from reading the comics as a kid. And people laid into me.
Right. Yeah.
And then I had that like, well, this isn't going to happen when I do a Star Wars show. Cause I know Star Wars but it was a great experience and I learned a lot. And you were coming in to the studio right after that and we bumped into each other, Jen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember cause you were like, yeah, I got to get you on the Star Wars show. And I think that's when I told you about the How Star Wars Conquered the Universe book, which we then went on to love and eventually had the author on Jedi Alliance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so there was the meeting, the circling, and then finally you invited me on the Jedi Alliance show, and kind of threw the doors open to be like, what in Star Wars would you like to talk about?
And to enter it into public record, we definitely have talked about it before here, but it's like, meeting you, I was my buddy Matt Key and the late great Granny Mahar was on the panel, so I was there hanging out with them, and then. You were so funny, and as a comic, you know, you have a tendency to put your walls up, and you're like, who the hell is that funny guy? And there was just something, there was a couple things you said. I was like, I literally was like, I can't, why would I be angry towards this person? That was really funny. And then we had the beers after, so it worked. And you were great at Marvel. And what, you know, at the time, and Jennifer, you're touching upon it too, at the time, well, Joseph, you too. Like, it was fun, positive, but it was jokey. We'll make our jokes. And Maude and I had made our jokes. We made our prequel jokes. And a lot of people started telling us in the comments, those are our movies. And I was like, I kind of secretly like them, but don't we all agree that we should poke fun at them? Like, isn't that what we determined legally? That this is what it's about? You know, my thought behind Jedi Alliance was, let's talk about the news, but it's also, what's better, a X-Wing or a TIE fighter? Though a TIE wing would be great too. And it was that kind of fun, let's do it like a half-hour news show type of vibe. Yes. And then when I invited you on, Joseph, come talk with Maude and I, open forum, what do you want? You said, this whole, I think you phrased it as, defend the prequels, which is even then a weird statement now looking back. Right. But, and I just remember, sure. And then you right then and there started to change how I looked at those films, but also how I wanted to talk about it. It started to change that. It was a watershed moment for me as a fan and how I wanted to go forward in this stuff.
Watershed day for me to just be able to really share my opinions. Mm-hmm. And it had come about because I was on Jackie Cation's podcast and she asked me, what I was obsessed with in the moment, and it's like Star Wars, but the prequels in particular, because I'd been watching Clone Wars, and I really had that moment alone in my apartment. It's like, damn it, I like these movies.
Yeah.
Which is why it was on my mind that day. And I had just done Jackie's podcast when you emailed. And that was great fun. And then you, Ken, invited me back on Jedi Alliance multiple times. In one of those times, a May the 4th show. So I believe it would have been May the 4th of 2015. Mm-hmm. A very pregnant Jennifer was one of the guests. And that show was just... it's May the 4th. I think it was like a 2-hour special. Yeah. And it was, I believe I met Mark Ellis that day too. And it was just,
me too.
Yeah. Yeah. And somebody brought us, themed beers.
Yes.
Oh yeah. One of the engineers there. Yes. Yes. Yes.
They were Blue Moon beers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have one, but I took a picture of it because I thought it was so cool.
I still have it. It's on a bookcase in my bedroom.
Oh my gosh.
A weird place for a bottle collection, but I live in a small place. And I just thought Jennifer was great. I had the same thing, I think, that Jennifer, you're describing a little bit. I had now been around this world enough to understand and see that there were some people who really, really liked what we're talking about and really wanted to talk about it or celebrate it or joke about it in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, this has become profitable enough that there are sharks here.
Yeah.
And I had that like, now I've done these been on Jedi Alliance enough and other shows and podcasts. And it was just the vibe going around everywhere at that time, even trying to get writing work of like suddenly nerd cred was good, where every writing manager wanted to have at least one nerd that they could. Hey, you looking for a nerd writer? I got one of those. That suddenly for me, it was a matter of. There were people like, oh, I like you. I think you're funny. But also I feel like if you would get you 10 more followers, you would slide a knife between my ribs. That's the vibe I get from this human. And meeting Jennifer, it was just like, oh, wow, this is somebody who just loves it and wants to celebrate it. And that was, my main memory of meeting Jennifer, of like, this is wonderful. Yeah. Somebody with, a different perspective, from the one that I had of really celebrating, the cute side, and the weird side and everything that we've talked about and joked about over the years, and just owning it and loving it. And so true and honest, made a big impression.
Yeah. And, the thing around that time, especially was as a woman being in the Star Wars space, was there was a lot of people wanting to get me and say I'm not a real fan. And so I was so careful when I put out a video, and there was a point where I didn't want to make videos anymore because I just felt like if I said one wrong thing, if I got the alien species just slightly off, people would come at me and my comments would be like, you're just a poser, you're pandering, all this stuff. And so when I was invited to come on Jedi Alliance, I was terrified because I was like, what if I misspeak? What if I accidentally say the wrong year that this was released or whatever, right? And because I hadn't really talked about this stuff with people, with friends. And so getting to meet both of you, you really helped me feel safe. Like it was okay. You didn't question my fandom. And it really, over these however many years we've been doing this, it's helped me become more free and feel like it's okay. It doesn't have to be perfect. Sometimes I do get the species wrong, or I do get a character's name wrong, or I can't remember that episode. It's okay. It doesn't take away my love for this fandom, for this franchise. And so that really is because of you guys, and it's helped me grow professionally and just personally to be able to be like, this is my opinion. This is what I have to say. Take it or leave it. Okay. You can say I'm a poser. You can say I'm not a fan, but I know in my heart that I've been, you know, watching this stuff since I was a child. Like, so it just, it's really, but I thank both of you for giving me the safe space to do that and explore this side of myself that I had never, especially on the internet, which is just already, it can be a scary place.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really happy to hear that. And it was such a weird time. And obviously far, far, far worse for women. But it was weird to go from the shame of the 80s and even, you know, for me, most of the 90s of do not let anyone see that you know this much about Star Wars.
Right.
No one must know that I know Greedo is a Rodian, you know, kind right. of thing. To, you know, a weird toxic masculine version of, you know, you're not a real man if you don't know Greedo is a Rodian kind of vibe. You know, it's so weird. And I think we're really going to pivot back the other way here of like that need to prove your fandom by knowing everything. I think it, hopefully that is wrapping up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope so too.
Yeah. Well, and it changed rapidly. You know, 2009 and 10, you know, Mark and Christian were doing the Schmoes things. Then I was circling around them as comics and everything. And we would do live shows in 2010. And like, I had a Princess Leia shirt I would wear every now and then. And I wore it as a look at me, the loser nerd vibe, right? Like, that was the joke. Mm-hmm. I owned a Leia shirt and a lightsaber, loser, right? I get it. And that's 2010. By 2014, you know, it was like, white people, I'm accepted for this. Like it was a real fast shift, and you're right. That's going to open up the doors to a lot of sharks, a lot of bad things. And it did. And I've had my ups and downs with the relationship of it there. But it was fascinating. It was a quick turnaround. I even have like Facebook memories that pop up, and it's like me kind of slagging on myself in 2011. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, self shame because it's protective. And we grew up with that. I remember interviewing around 2012. My friend Stacey Howard was on my Knapsack File show, and we had this discussion. You know, she's about 15 years younger than me. We had this discussion about the word nerd, and she's like, "It's just such a wonderful, positive nerd name to describe how someone who's passionate about something." And I was like, "I'm so glad that's what it is to you. That's not what it is to me. It is hiding under a slide on a playground because I got called a nerd because I liked to wore a Luke Skywalker shirt, and I'm glad that's changed. But it was sometimes hard to shake in those early days.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that is some of the environment that led to Force Center itself. Because you had left Jedi Alliance, mm-hmm. Ken, for your job at Screen Junkies, and it kind of spur of the moment, I was like, I think maybe I would like to try out co-hosting that, and ended up doing that with our friend Mark Donica, and it was really fun. But I think it got closer and closer to Force Awakens coming out, a little bit more of the YouTube toxicity was there, and I really liked the show, but it was getting a little bit sort of rigid. In terms of like the structure and what could be discussed. So then when you brought up like, hey, I miss having my own thing where I can talk about whatever I wanted. Do you want to do this podcast? I was really excited about it because I felt like, okay, well, there are no preconceived notions about what the structure is. This is starting, you know, basically from scratch.
No cameras.
No cameras. And we can talk about it however we want, and we don't have to do just one main show. We could do a main show, and then we could do a little side fun shows, which was kind of the initial idea. Mm-hmm. So that's my memory of starting actual Force Center. It really for me growing out of the Jedi Alliance thing, then the idea of like, it can just be the three of us, all nice, all fun, all background as performers. Mm-hmm. No knives and any ribs. Mm-hmm. And we can all just talk about Star Wars the way we want to and find out what is that? How do we want to talk about Star Wars? And then I think the show and the whole network kind of developed out of what are the different ways we want to talk about it. What are your thoughts on that, Ken?
Yeah. I mean, the name Force Center had stuck around in my mind for years, and you two just seemed like a great natural extension of, you know, the natural extension of what we've been doing is to form up and do something, and we can discuss too. You pivoted early for his Joseph, because I still had the mentality of the YouTube side of it, of not being snarky, but just, you know, obviously I make fun of the Captain Phasma name a lot more back then, or the Puffer Pig, those kind of things. But that came out of a lot of things we talked about. But I just remember one thing I thought, because I'm and kind of inherently lazy, is I thought, this is great. Joseph can do his show. He can record it. Jen can do hers. I'll do a solo show. And then every once in a while, we'll meet together for the main show.
Right.
And it was like, we'll have a feed. It will be great. And then it just worked out that the main show was the focus. And that always should have been the case. And several mics ago, several mixing boards ago, several editing programs ago, here we are. But I think it was the great thing about that time, Force Awakens was still in front of us. And it was a world of possibilities, and I love that. That's what I, you know, going back, it seems like so long ago. And it is in another era, but it was just like, I'm going to do a Star Wars podcast feed. Cause I had my Knapsack Files feed, which is still going strong now, is the Knapsack Network and the Bothering Shows. But I had Spotlight Star Wars was on that, because I was like, you know, maybe on Saturdays I will do shows that talk about the things, those nerd things I like, again, quote unquote nerd things. Game of Thrones being the unknown nerdy program that no one was watching. So it was like Spotlight:Star Wars, Spotlight:Game of Thrones. And that's why that kind of silly name carried over to the Force Center when I would do those shows on Saturdays. It was just like, then it was like, wow, but now we have our own. That felt so good.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The main show to me was just like, it was the most gratifying, because we started talking about the ideas, which is what I had really, really wanted. I don't even think I was clear that how badly I wanted that. But we started very close to Force Awakens. We only had a couple episodes before we really got into the groove, and before we did our actual review of Force Awakens. And Ken and I saw it together, and think for me, that was the third viewing. And we didn't really have a system down yet. So it was just Ken and I. And, you know, it was great to be around this whole weekend of people talking about it. But I was already a little frustrated, because everybody was just kind of like, thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like this part? Was this part good or bad? And I was just like, there's so much going on in this movie of what it's about the meeting of the new and the old, and how do you handle the past. And like, I remember making a list on my phone. It's like, I don't know if Ken's going to want to do this, but I remember going like, can we talk about like what the movie's like about? Could that be the focus of our review, instead of just listing every element and going, did you like the Falcon? Did you like this? Did you like that?
I forever indebted to you, not just professionally, but personally, because that really started opening up how I look at a lot of things, including personal themes in our lives. And we can follow that. But so credit to you, and credit to Jen as well. I just remember you had said some comment, Jen, about the masks and how the movie, the trailer, even for Force Awakens, has a lot of characters taking off their masks. And you, almost 10 years later, we could all look back and go, well, yeah, duh. But then at the time, coming from the world I had worked in and was now over at Screen Junkies Daily, that was revolutionary. But what you brought to the table that day for that recording session was kind of revolutionary, because I had grown just already frustratingly tired, if that's a phrase, of the review shows that were like, hi, welcome to the show. We're reviewing Rebels. So this scene happened, and then this scene happened, and then this scene happened. And every reviewer was just talking about what they had just seen. I had thought, well, that's what we do. And I remember Maude and I were sitting, they were wonderful folks. We were sitting on a Rebels review show. And this was before even Force Centered formed prominently and officially. And that was going on. And I just was so kind of angry. It was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to sit there. And even on later on in some of the other shows I did, a Collider or Screen Junkies Plus about Game of Thrones. And everyone just wants to regurgitate what they just saw, point out Easter eggs, and snark on it. Jen, you had this little statement, and I remember thinking, oh God, the masks. I didn't even see that. And then Joseph, your thought of, can we talk about what's going on in the film? Simple things at the time that changed so much for me personally. So thanks.
Yeah, no, it's being focused on it has really impacted my life in a positive way, in the way I think about all art, and the way I think about my own art, and the way I think about art that isn't for me, but other people love, being able to just say like, well, why? What are they responding to? Even if I don't necessarily like it myself or think it's flawed, all those things have been really helpful. And I think the other thing with the particular beginning of Force Center is we eventually got into a rhythm with the main show doing it every 2 weeks, and then moved to I was sorry for you when one job ended, but it was like, hey, but you don't have to physically go to work. Let's start doing this weekly. But we all did have our different little shows. Jennifer was doing these great NPR Meet Star Wars investigative journalism about topics. We did the Data Bank Brawl show for a while, which was really an excuse to just celebrate the weirdos and make jokes. So I enjoyed it too, because it felt well-rounded. We can talk about the deepest ideas. We can look at the actual history behind it, not just the stories, but the history behind them. And we can just have fun. We can make jokes, and that's great. And the well-roundedness of it at the beginning, and I think still, but particularly at the beginning, it made me really, really happy.
One thing I'll say that one of the reasons why I have wanted to come back, obviously after having kids and things like that, life gets really hairy and stressful, but you have always left the door open for me, which I really appreciate. And what's been interesting to see is from 2015 on, there seems to be two paths, the light and the dark. I mean, honestly, that's how it feels, because it feels like there's podcasts and there's creators who choose to celebrate. And they might have criticisms about the things that they see or whatever, but they always try and frame it in a way that's like respectful. And then there's the other side, which is very much how I see the dark side. And these are people who try to get views and clicks by saying the most horrific, salacious things to make people upset. Mm-hmm. And they really traffic in like negativity. And that's their choice. But at some point, I do find that like you can't sustain that, or you certainly start burning a lot of bridges, and you won't be invited to press things. And I mean, if you say enough personal negative things against creators and say how terrible they are, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like it's just kind of exhausting. And that's where, go outside and get some fresh air, because it's like, come on, like this is supposed to be fun. That's the spirit of Star Wars. And that's why I keep coming back to Force Center, even after all these life things, is because it's fun. And we can get into the weeds about our criticisms of things. But it's always like, you know what? At the end of the day, this is just something we love, and we're going to celebrate it. Mm. And I love that. I love that perspective.
That's great. And I love the way you said to talk about the things that you don't like respectfully. And to me, that's all it is. It isn't, never say anything bad or anything you don't like. We've had some great conversations when one of us really responds to it and another of us is, that one didn't work for me. And just being able to do it respectfully it's so great. It's not that much work.
and I think
room for other people's opinions.
Yeah. And I think it comes from us being creators ourselves. And like, you know how hard people work to try and put something together, how long they labor over a script, all the crew that's there and the actors and what it took to get this made. And so, yeah, it may not resonate with us, or we may not like this scene, or that performance may not be, it could have been better. Right. But we're going to still be respectful because we know the hard work that went into it.
And
I don't know. I just have much more sympathy.
Yes, very well said. And I don't like how popular it gets to be to not have a deep, thoughtful analysis of a creator's career. That's one thing to look at. Hey, here are 8 films made by this one artist. What themes emerge? Great. Bring their personal life into it. But what I see so much is this disrespectful. I'm just going to guess this artist did this thing I like because this weird bonkers reason. Or you could tell they were lazy. Like, no. No.
Right. This whole lazy thing. I'm like, oh, no. Really?
No.
Do you know how production works?
99% of the time. Like, you might be onto something that there's something off. It's not working for some reason, but, mm-hmm. you know, it is mm-hmm. rarely laziness. One of the final things I want to say about this whole journey, it's been really gratifying. We're talking about some of the good experiences we had finding one another and other like-minded friends and navigating around some of the people who I think have gone to the dark side. I think the landscape of pop culture talking has changed massively, where there, I think yeah. there are a lot of people younger than us who have gravitated toward, yeah, we absolutely talk respectfully and we absolutely talk about the ideas. And I feel like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like there were as many podcasts and YouTube channels that discussed more of the heart of the themes and the ideas and what's at stake. And I don't feel like there were that many when we started. And I feel like there are many, many, many now. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's a great, first of all, Jen, I love, you basically just said inside of us live two podcasts, Light Wolf and the Dark Wolf. Yeah. Yeah. For me, you know, it was fun having a burst of listeners from a lot of other things I was doing and everything, but in 2014 and in 15, 16 range and Collider, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't until, like, for me, 2018, 2019, when this side of the things started to really click, that people were listening and the community was there. We always got it. We launched the Patreon, all those kind of things. But, and to what you said, Joseph, like, by the time you roll into Chicago in 2019, you looked around and was like, oh, I got a show. I'm doing this. And there's so many wonderful, warm people that we've met with over the years, been on some of their shows. Some of them I even know. Work with that, you know, little Alden guy sniveling, begging for attention in Chicago. I'm kidding, Alden. I work with him on Casually Talking. Like, yeah. And you're right, Joseph. It just, so many good voices are out there, and there's going to be the wolves, who are doing what they do. And you cannot change that. And I'm happy to be part of, a small part of that big, big, big landscape that really you looked out on the snowy Sunday in Chicago. Like, there's some good folks around here.
Yeah, lots of good folks. Any other final thoughts from you, Ken, before we move on?
No, been an absolute thrill. 9 seasons and going, 8+ years. It never ceases to amaze me that this is one of the only things that's worked in my career. I'm not tired of it. And even though, you know, I have to admit right now, taking a little pause because of the strikes, I think I'm in a weird spot where I'm like, I think I needed the break from talking Star Wars, and I'm not happy that it came about the way it did with a destructive and disruptive strike that was needed to change some things. But I am not, there's no fear of me stopping, fear of me moving on. It's just, that's because of you two and what we do and the community around it. So even if I'm struggling with a little bit on some of the stuff right now, I want to come here with my best reasons for not liking something or not connecting with it or why I love it. And that drives me, 8 years, 9 seasons later, still drives me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, I think we'll be able to have lots of fun conversations, about, the actual stuff we've missed when, both strikes are over, when the SAG, after strike is, resolved. But also I think we'll be able to have some, reflection on what it was like to take this break. So I'm looking forward to being able to dive, thoughtfully and respectfully into all that. Any final thoughts from you, Jennifer?
Yeah, no, echoing what Ken said, I really did kind of need this break from Star Wars. I'm still, you know, enjoying it in other ways, but I have not finished Ahsoka. And I think part of the reason why is because we haven't been talking about it. And, you know, I had some things I wanted to work out, but I had no one to discuss it with. And I'm like, well, all right. So now that I know that we're going to hopefully be talking about it soon, I'm going to get my notebook ready and I'm going to dive back in. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. On the show.
Yeah, that's so great. And I have been enjoying stuff, but I hadn't mentioned gently, even before the strikes, that I was getting frustrated at the beginning of this year at the release schedule of the shows. Because and the books and the video games, because what I have enjoyed so much is being able to watch things multiple times and sit with them and think about them and discuss them. And for me, it wasn't any of the actual stories. It was the sort of corporate face behind it of like, nope, you don't have any time to think about that show because literally you got to watch the next one right now and pick up that book. And oh, here comes right. I get it. And I know we have many listeners who are like, if there could be a new thing every day and two a day, I'd love it. Great. And in all respect to that. But for me, I was getting frustrated with not having the space and time to soak it in. Mm-hmm. So for me, this has been good to be able to take a step back and give myself the time to process one story at a time.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I look forward to processing even more when we get back to it. All right, that was a big look at the origin story of Force Center. So I think we should take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Other Center, Questions of the Other. We did it. We put our origin story on the public record. We've talked about it in other spots, but now it's all there. We can just point people back, fun looking back on the heady days of 2014 internet discussions about pop culture. Thanks, Joseph. We got some more questions.
That is right. We've got a question from PQ, who is going to mention it in this question, but it was great to meet PQ at the great convention in Minneapolis Convergence a couple years ago now. So PQ says, first off, I didn't think I could love you all more, but Other Center is everything I knew I wanted. Thank you for being so open and honest. I knew we shared a mutual love of Star Wars, but Other Center just confirms we'd be great pals even without Star Wars. Anyway, enough sappiness, says PQ. On to the question. I've had the great fortune of meeting Joseph at Convergence and was wondering if Joseph brought Ken and Jennifer back to Minneapolis, what would be his perfect weekend of showing them around Minneapolis? Bonus points if Ken and Jennifer have ideas on what they'd want to see in the beautiful city of Minneapolis. Come for the Star Wars, stay for the Other Center. Cheers, PQ. Thank you, PQ, for the fun of hanging out at Convergence. And I'm sorry I didn't have even more time. I had a busy convention of shows, but I would love to hang out more when I get back to Convergence. And thank you for the nice words about Other Center. I know people are anxious for us to get back to that other galaxy, and I'm anxious to get back there too, but it's been really nice to have all the support for Other Center. So with that said, I want to start this question with you, Ken and Jennifer. Have either of you ever been to Minneapolis?
I have not.
No.
Okay. So I want to start from that perspective. Jennifer, what do you, whether it's real or imagined, what do you know about Minneapolis?
I know nothing. And I actually honestly thought until I looked it up that Laverne and Shirley was in Minneapolis. I believe it was Milwaukee. Not the same place.
No.
Not the same place.
Slightly different. I wish Laverne and Shirley had been in Minneapolis. That would be another source of great pride. Ken, I assume music led you to know of the existence of Minneapolis.
You would be correct, except for one thing, baseball.
Yes, that whole winning the World Series when you were young,
1987 twice. And 91, I think my all-time favorite World Series is 1991, Minnesota-Atlanta. And I had some childhood friends that I was real close with, and they had a cousin, Marty. Do you know Marty, Joseph?
not that I'm aware of.
He was from, Minnesota, but that's the other thing I actually want to ask you. Minnesota, just as this catch-all phrase that sometimes just means Minneapolis, that they live in the city there, or just the state. Yeah, it was so my friend's cousin Marty would come out every summer from Minnesota and tell tales of actually going to the Metrodome to watch the Twins, and I was fascinated with that. Yes, then later on, music, pro wrestling, comedy. Minnesota overall, but Minneapolis is a hotbed and has been for years, decades of those three things. And I've always had some reverence for the city just based on those three things I love.
Yeah, no, the I hadn't thought about the World Series. As soon as you said baseball, I was like, oh yeah, that, you know, I went to one of those parades. I can find my home run hanky, which
you got a homer hanky? Oh,
I do. Wow. I do. Yeah. And I think it was in 87 that school was called off, and my friend and I are like, I guess we could just go downtown to the parade because we don't have school because the baseball team won.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was amazing time. And yeah, the First Ave and the fame of Prince and the Minneapolis Sound and all that. And yeah, the I forgot about the pro wrestling connection, but as I've told you before, the influential early in kind of modern pro wrestling, Baron Von Raschke, the Baron.
Yeah.
Wonderful, kind, gentle giant of a man. There was a show about his life at the History Theater, and I was one of the actors, and he himself was in it, and we got a standing ovation every night, and it was not for me or any other actor. It was for Baron von Raschke. Great. So Minnesota, the state, many people would rise up with pitchforks at the idea that Minnesota and Minneapolis are one and the same. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, like many states, there's a lot of people who live in different parts of Minnesota who are really not sure about that big Minneapolis city. So Minneapolis and St. Paul, two cities often called the Twin Cities. St. Paul was this is a joke that I've used in some local stand-up, but it is actually the true history. it was the place you had to get off the boat. Otherwise, you ran into debris from a waterfall. So St. Paul was started because that was where the boat ended. And then Minneapolis was started because of the power of St. Anthony Falls to the straight hydropower, not hydroelectric power, just the hydropower to turn turbines for factory work, particularly flour milling. So then the two cities are not that different in age, but they grew up, you know, around one another. And in general, the joke is, and people can have different opinions about the truth, but that St. Paul is slightly older. And so it's kind of like this calmer, more mature place. In Minneapolis is the riotous, naughty kid. So there's this whole culture there between Minneapolis and St. Paul that, and some people from St. Paul are like, we're not sleepy. And like, you know, whole thing. But Minneapolis and the Twin Cities and then Minnesota. So I lived briefly in St. Paul, but I've lived most of my life in Minneapolis and love the city and love the energy of it was always a place of fun and excitement. So if I took you guys, or you were willing to come visit Minneapolis, it would be ideally during my friend's annual bar crawl. Because we're now all of the age, like they, a lot of people go on the bar crawl and do not have a single drink or they have one at the beginning or at the end, because it isn't about proving anything alcohol wise, but it remains a lovely summertime walk through some of the most beautiful in major parts of Minneapolis. So for PQ and other people who know Minneapolis, we would normally start out in Northeast Minneapolis, which is right on the Mississippi River. And then we would cross over the Hennepin Avenue Bridge or the Stone Arch Bridge. And then we would go into downtown Minneapolis and then into uptown. So it's a really, really nice walk past lots of beautiful and famous parts of Minneapolis. And in particular, the places that I would want to take you guys, and I want to see what you think of this. So there's a over the St. Anthony Falls, the falls are still there, but there's a concrete apron put on them years and years and years ago so that they didn't collapse. So it's a very weird looking waterfall. It's like a little ramp. It looks like a giant made a toy in the bathtub. But then there's this bridge called the Stone Arch Bridge, which was built in 1883 by James J. Hill for railroads, but it was converted to a pedestrian bridge. But it's right over the Mississippi. You get views of the Pillsbury Mill and the original General Mills Mill. All this history, all these old buildings, the beauty of the river, this weird falls. If I told both of you, I'd like to take you on a walk across an old railroad bridge. Would you both be like, sounds fun? Or would you be like, we have other needs?
Oh, yeah. I'd do it.
Oh, yeah. You would.
Yeah.
I'd like to sit at a cafe, go to a restaurant.
Well, you are in luck, because if we walk the right way, there's one of the oldest restaurants in Minneapolis, the Astor Cafe, which is just a beautiful place we could sit and have a nice drink. Yeah, there's a bookstore that I love, Uncle Hugo's, Uncle Edgar's, that I could take you guys to. There is there's a speakeasy bar called Volstead's. Volstead is the politician from Minnesota who actually started prohibition in the government. So it's kind of one of our claims to infamy. Sorry about that, nation. Anyway,
Volstead Act.
Yeah. Almost everything else is sort of like lots of, you know, little restaurants and places I love. So, but I would want to know what I would try to show the spirit of the city, the lakes, the rivers, the beautiful summer, and see what you guys both thought. But then I would give in and I would take you to the Mall of America. Do you guys want to go to the Mall of America?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There. This would be good for me, because I get real grumpy about it, because the Mall of America is a large mall. There are some rides in it. It's great.
Oh, wow.
I have friends who work there and they do a great job. It's a great place. But sometimes it's like when people are like, I tell them about, like, it's the Stone Arch Bridge is full of history. It's where Betty Crocker and the Doughboy were born. And there's a waterfall. And it's the reason we're here. And they're like, yeah, but I want to see a large Nordstrom's. Like,
I'd like to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would take you, take you to the history that I care about, and then we can go to the Mall of America, which has its own history.
Yeah.
And Ken can walk me through the security concerns of Mall of America.
Well, do you remember in the mid 2000s, there was a reality show about the security department there?
Was there?
Yeah, absolutely. No? It lasted like one or two seasons, and I loved the show, and as during the height of my security career, it was fascinating. So I would absolutely want to go see it. I want to experience the history too. And for me as a music fan, you know, yeah, Semisonic I could talk about, but one of my favorite bands of all time is The Replacement. So to go to First Ave, to the First Avenue music venue that just absolutely launched so many careers, I'd have to see that. And then I have to walk a Skyway because of the Replacement song Skyway, which I've explained before. I had no idea really what that meant when I'd sing the lyrics when I first heard it in the 90s. But I'd have to experience all of that.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be great. I'm planning the route now for this future day. Any other final thoughts, Jennifer, about field trips in general?
What would you say that Minneapolis's food is? What would be the, you know, like if we're talking about Chicago and pizza and New York and pizza and bagels, like what would be Minneapolis?
There is a kind of Minneapolis, Minnesota pizza that is mostly just, in my opinion, very cheese heavy, but very, very good. There's an extremely large Somali population in Minneapolis. Yeah. So there's a lot of great Somali food. And Minneapolis is there's been some great Mexican food I've had there, made by, you know, actual people from who have heritage in Mexico. So I would try to take you to some of those places and get your opinion on that.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. I like it.
Yeah.
Multicultural.
Yeah. You could have a very multicultural selection. And then we could have, well, also then the Juicy Lucy. Do you guys know about Juicy Lucy?
What?
The food item? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want one.
Okay. Yeah.
What is it?
So I have a long stand-up bit about this too. It's almost many, many things that have been invented in Minnesota or Minneapolis are some sort of container. Which makes sense for a cold place that sometimes has some emotional issues. The Juicy Lucy is a burger where hot liquid cheese has been injected into the center of the burger.
Oh my gosh.
God, isn't it great?
It is really tasty, but it is also a fun metaphor for the stereotype of passive aggressive, where like you think you're eating a nice calm cheeseburger and then you take one wrong bite and sudden hot cheese fires out at you.
Wow.
They're really tasty, and they're two places that compete for whether or not they first created the Juicy Lucy. So
that.
We could go to both and sample them.
I love the Cobb salad was invented here or there. We'll find out.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, PQ, for the question. And thank you, everybody, for letting me go on about Minneapolis. We go to our final question from James Pasqualucci, who says, hello there, Other Center. Please forgive me because today I ask about a dreaded topic around these parts, puns and wordplay. To anyone who has listened to Joseph and Ken for quite some time, they know how unfavorably you look upon these attempts at humor. I still won't forget when Ken said puns were party tricks. While I am personally a fan of puns and wordplay, I'm curious on why they don't work for you. I know they don't, but I can't recall the specific reasoning. Why do they not stylistically or functionally work for you both when used? Can't wait to hear your discussion. And thank you for the amazing podcast while the strikes are going on. Thank you for the question and the support, James. I'm so glad to dive into this, and I'm so glad to get Jennifer's take, too. I do want to start with something perhaps controversial, Ken.
Mm.
This is something that I've been meaning to talk with you about for a while because I am with you on puns. Mm. I think wordplay is a much larger umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I'm not a fan of puns, but there's a lot of wordplay I like, and there's a distinction to be made. So I will share some thoughts on that, but I want to bring you in here, Ken. What do you think when you I think how do you define puns and wordplay? What do you mean when you say that?
It means I judge your comic take. No, because I have a comic friend who puts out little clips, not even like video clips. He puts out like quotes from his stand-up stuff, and it's like wordplay stuff, and it's creative. And I had this discussion with our buddy Alden Diaz. We actually had an interview and we talked about this on air. I do think it's a skill, even puns. We talked about the history of the show. Maude Garrett and I hosted Jetta Lance. She is a pun monster. You get her going on her Admiral Akbar pun routine, she'll go 20 minutes giving you puns. And the joy in her face is worth the journey, I guess. And I can't come up with it all. My buddy Josh McCuga lives for puns, and he's good at it. I can't do it. So, I'm with you on that. The dividing line. I look at this one friend of mine, Johnny, he's a comic, and I'm like, I get it. I just don't know what you're saying, and I don't know what it's all the purpose of it all, and it just tweaks my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, Jennifer, I want to get you in here for a second, but just for my obsession with puns and wordplay, I think what you might be responding to, Ken, in the distinction for me is, in my comic theory course I took in college, the definitions used for different jokes were, is this an innocent joke or a tendentious joke? Tendentious meaning to have meaning or even to attack something. And the important difference to me is puns are almost always wordplay. They are simply creating a contrast between two words even sounding similar. There's more to the whole culture of puns we can talk about. And then some wordplay is simply playful. They're like, I think kind of, you know, kids starter jokes of, you know, what does a cow say? And then instead of saying moo, saying bah, kids going, it's wrong. Like that's sort of like innocent wordplay. It's not meaningful. Whereas there can be wordplay. It is playing around with the idea that these two words have a similar meaning or a connection, but it's tendentious. There is meaning. It has a point of view, a point of satire. And I'm with you of like, it's an impressive skill to string together a bunch of wordplay, but I don't really like it unless it has some meaning. Like, you know, it's like the Marx Brothers have a lot of wordplay, and a part of what is powerful about them is that it's this barrage. And some of it is just innocent wordplay, but a lot of it has meaning. The famous sanity clause bit, where Groucho says that's in every contract. That's what you call a sanity clause. And it's a language breakdown where Chico says, you can't fool me. There ain't no sanity clause. And then they go on to have this fight. And like that's about the breakdown of language. That's about, you know, a huckster with a contract. There's things going on in that. It's not just wordplay. I had a stand-up bit where I was telling this story about doing a commercial with animals, and no joke, the animals that were in it were a cougar and a bear. So I did a commercial with a cougar and a bear, the actual animals, not either of the, you know, cultural things we think of with cougar and bear. So that is wordplay, but it's wordplay with meaning because it's about the ideas. So does that distinction make sense between wordplay that has meaning and wordplay that is just we're twisting words around for fun?
Yeah, for me it does. You mentioned like the Marx Brothers and stuff back then, where, you know, that's how you were making your points but getting away with it because you weren't allowed to make some of those points or something like that stuff. I think of that stuff in that era, even comedians of that time. So I'm there for that. It's all about meaning, and it sometimes the meaning is just joy. Right. Like I'm not when I see people doing it, I don't get angry. One person thinks really good about it publicly. I don't know her. We have a lot of mutual friends, but Kelly Knox, Star Wars author, and she loves doing the Star Wars puns and wordplay. And I see them. I don't groan. I go, yeah. I move on with my day, and I don't need to take anyone's joy away. And I think I think there's value in just joy. And again, I think she's very good at them. But yeah, to what you're saying, yeah, anything that has a greater purpose is going to be more interesting to me. And unfortunately, a lot of the punsters I've been around, it's just like a gnat flying around your face.
Well, I let's put a pin in the gnat, because that's the big thing for me is I prefer jokes that have some meaning, even if they're simple and straightforward. And I don't love them, but I'm fine with just, it's a pun. It's just a wordplay. It doesn't mean anything. It's more some of the cultural baggage around the puns that gets to me, but I want to bring Jennifer in here. Yeah. How do you feel about puns in wordplay, Jennifer? And do you make a distinction on how you define them?
I love them all. I think that they're really fun. I like the musicality often that comes with them. To me, I feel like there's something clever about it. It's just the playing of words, which is always interesting when you look at the English language and, you know, a double meaning of a word, or like for a pun, the pigs were a squeal. Like, it's just silly. And I come from Second City, which was a groan is as good as a laugh. So if I can make someone
That might explain some of some Saturday Night Live sketches to me, and
yeah,
my strong opinions about those. Yeah.
So I mean, I like it. I'm always impressed with people who are able to do puns and who do it so effortlessly and so quickly. And whenever I come up with one, usually accidentally, I'm delighted. I'm like, I did it. I don't know. It's like finding I don't know how to describe it. Finding a prize in the Cracker Jack box is such a wonderful little surprise. I have no problem with it. I guess anytime that anybody takes the effort or tries to make someone laugh, I appreciate it, because I know making people laugh is really freaking hard. I appreciate all forms, I guess.
Yeah. And I appreciate the perspective of like, let's have fun and be silly. And I think they don't bother me when there's somebody just having fun and being silly, and they don't amuse me, but they don't bother me.
Correct.
I have a friend who he's not often like this. He likes wordplay. He's a very literary guy, and I think he can speak eloquently about the tradition of it in Irish literature, even of all the hidden meanings by twisting words around. You know, right. It's not a particularly original joke, but anytime that somebody posts on social media, you know, do you validate joke and the double meaning of parking and God, yes, we all need validation. Mm-hmm. Not an original joke, but it kind of makes me laugh every time because it's emotional. But my friend had one night where he was just like, I'm going to do puns. And the one he kept trying to get a laugh from is, you know what the problem with philosophers is? They put Descartes before the horse.
No.
What the problem with what is?
The problem with philosophers is they put Descartes before the horse. he would have loved you,
that's
Jennifer.
That's funny. That's cute. I like it.
Right? But it means nothing. It's just I found a philosopher's name and I'm talking about philosophers, so it's innocent wordplay. Mm-hmm. I think that particular evening my friend embodied what I think you're reacting to, Ken, is the joke wasn't the good-natured wordplay that Jennifer laughed at. The joke was he was going to keep saying it until we laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. This cultural thing with puns where there is a thing attached to it for some people, not saying all people by any means, but for some people of I'm going to say something that I know the people around me don't find funny, and I'm going to insist that they laugh. And the joke is, that I'm not funny, but I insist people laugh.
Wow. Weaponizing their puns and wordplay. Wow.
Often. Yeah. Ken, is that what you're talking about?
Often. And I've named the names of people who I love, so I'm going to exclude them from this list. But often the punsters follow up their puns. Actually, I should say follow up the silence to their puns with, oh, come on. Right? And I'm always like, no. No, I'm not going to come on with you on this one. I get what you did. You took a word that sounds like the other and you put it, yay. I'm not. And that's what drives me. It's you know, crafting bits is hard. And this, you know, again, you're mentioning like the Marx Brothers. I grew up on watching some of that stuff and not getting it because it was that was the point of the wordplay. It wasn't for a 10-year-old. It was for the, you know, adults trying to circumnavigate film codes and stuff like that. Yeah, that's work. That's smart. That's intelligence. That's something. And I just don't, God, it drives me crazy. And that's why I describe it as a party trick. You know, because I'm equally as grumpy about magic tricks.
Oh yeah, I don't like magic tricks.
I've been invited to the Magic Castle so many times, and I do want to go one time, but I'm always like no, because every magician I've met off stage is still on stage, and they're still pulling out. There's one guy used to go to these parties, and every time you talk to him, he'd be like, "Hey, do you want to see a trick?" And I'd be like, "Nah, I'm good, man." And he'd still pull and he'd insist, no, pick a card. You can come see me at the Magic Castle. I'm like, I'm not dressing up for in a suit because you have to and go get a steak to watch you do a card trick, man. I'm not doing it. And I'm not doing it at this party. And it just, and then you turn the corner and there's someone going, here's a pun. Come on. And it's the same energy.
Is it because you're around a lot of comedians? Do you think that you encounter more of these terrible punsters?
I don't know. Because not all, trust me, comics drive me crazy too. Joseph's touching on it. It's, I don't mean to be just an a-hole about it, but I'm just like, you're wasting my time. We're not saying anything important. There's war in Ukraine and I got to pick a card at a party. Stop.
Yeah. I feel the same way about magicians. Yes.
Do something with your art.
Is it the always on stage thing with with magicians that you've encountered, Jennifer?
I don't like being held captive to watch, you know, your trick. And then I just don't like it. And if the person's not good and then I have to pretend like it is good, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. The puns don't bother me though. I don't mind a pun. Maybe it's because I haven't encountered these insufferable. No,
you're just a better punsters. Woman than me. It's okay to say. I'm just grumpy about this stuff.
No. I think we're getting, in my opinion, to the heart of the thing. And it is about agency. Mm-hmm. And it is about respecting boundaries for me. And mm-hmm. and I can often be extremely touchy about those things. So I always want to tread carefully. Mm-hmm. And I am not saying this about anybody who loves puns or everybody who loves puns or everybody who decides to share puns. Mm-hmm. I think the thing is maybe Jennifer, you've encountered people who tell a pun, you legitimately like it, you laugh, and you're done. The social contract has been completed.
The exchange is done. Yeah.
They made a joke. Then you had the agency to make a choice. Your honest choice was to laugh. Mm-hmm. What I've encountered many times is people say their joke. I use my agency to, I'm sorry, I honestly didn't find that funny. And I'm a people pleaser. So it's not fun for me to not find it funny. But then the demand that I acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. It takes my agency away. And mm-hmm. I think there are, I was picking on my friend. He only did it one night. I've met other people who that's their whole sense of humor of I come to a party, mm-hmm. I'm big and loud and I take up space. And the fact that I'm taking up so much space is the joke. And I'm going to mm-hmm. shout a joke. And if you didn't laugh the first time, I'm going to shout it again. And then I'm going to chide you if you didn't laugh. Mm-hmm. And it mm-hmm. doesn't, at that point, it doesn't have anything to do with the joke. Mm-hmm. The pun is just a joke structure that it happens to not be my favorite, but I got no problem if it's others. Mm-hmm. It's that some people, not all people, some people gravitate towards puns because they're a way to sort of barrage you into playing a part in their drama mm-hmm. of being a part in their performance that you didn't choose to be a part of and they won't let you out of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'm wondering if I'm one of these people. This is what I'm wondering.
You are maybe, not.
Maybe, hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me because I love a pun. And I often, it's almost like I just randomly will fall into it. And I get delighted when it happens. And then oftentimes, I think what happened on the live show, I did a pun. And it made me so tickled. And I often will apologize because what happens is people don't laugh. But I'm not one that's going to make you laugh. I just will acknowledge this awkwardness that I have unfortunately created for all of us mm-hmm. of telling a terrible pun joke that nobody laughs at except for me. And I usually will laugh at my own pun and then I apologize and we move on. It's just my life. And I'm realizing mm-hmm. I'm the problem.
No,
I'm amazed that we have been able to have this four center relationship as long as we have.
Your Honor, I enter into court evidence that Jen has already submitted. She apologizes. She's aware. Jen, you're aware.
My pun problem.
What Joseph's describing is, by the way, this is a sliding scale, like Yoda's what leads to suffering speech. Puns lead to magic tricks, lead to pranks. And I will fight you if you prank me. You do not. The one currency we have left in the world between us is trust, and pranks intentionally defy that trust. And at a dry April Fool's Day, I am a-hole on that day. You don't do any of that stuff. And recently, by the way, there was recently some YouTube prankster got shot and they found the guy innocent for the most part of charges because everyone in the court was in the jury was like, yeah, don't do that.
Don't prank people.
Yeah. And this is last game. What Joseph described, Joseph, I can't name the name. Joseph changed the nature of my friendship with someone who I was pretty close with because we're at a party situation together. And I just kind of met it because how did that go? And Joseph said, I never forget. He goes, he is the type of person that has spent his entire life never having to question how much space he takes up in a room and it shows type of thing. And my perspective, and that person and I got in an argument one time later on where he's like, I'm fun at parties. Everyone has a great time. And I looked at him and I go, have you asked them? and it's all in the same scale. So you, Jen, again, Kelly Knox, who's always tweeting this stuff. You're sweet souls trying to make people laugh or maybe yourself.
Yeah.
What Joe's talking about is it's beyond the jokes. It's the space they love to take up.
It isn't you, Jennifer, because you would never take anyone's agency away. And I know that probably sounds melodramatic, but like the thing you said on the live stream was what we were trying to figure out what sort of meat toppings we wanted on a pizza, and you said we could go hog wild.
Yes.
It's hilarious. I would say that's wordplay. It's something that has an accidental double meaning. There's meaning. Right. You didn't mean to be celebrating the fact that we get lots of parts of a pig on a pizza, but you accidentally said that and it was hilarious. But you weren't like, let's stop the entire stream until Ken and Joseph both agree it was funny. You didn't go through the comments going, come on.
right.
I don't think it is about the puns because they are just wordplay and you can take them or leave them just like any joke. I think we're really gravitating with the magic tricks and frankly, by far, men who use this as a, you have to react the way I want you to. And I think early in my life, I encountered adults, parents of other kids who needed to dominate things and would not move on until everybody laughed at their pun. And it sunk in deep of like, that's a person to be scared of. That's a person who does not respect my boundaries. And I learned that from, a really dumb joke about the cart before the horse. That this person, this, adult, this man needs to be his way or the highway. That's my personal experience. I think a ton of people just like him. I think a ton of people find fun in the they're so bad, they're good. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when people kind of take it a step farther in it and don't let you decide for yourself whether it's funny and move on.
The Venn diagram of these people that want to take up space with the pun tellers, with the magicians, there's got to be
pranksters and
the pranksters. Yes. The Venn diagram.
A performance is just like a holy contract to me that you enter into, and don't anybody come to a party and put on a show without me getting the opportunity to opt into being an audience member.
Right.
Humans telling jokes back and forth, great. But if you're putting on a show, I opt in. I get to opt in.
If I have to put down my shrimp cocktail or my fork to pay attention to you, and I had no choice, we got a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Like live music. Sometimes you'll go, you want to have a nice meal, and all of a sudden now you're a part of this show that you never knew you were going to be a part of. That's when I actually bristle, is live music. Especially if they're not good and I don't like what they're singing. Now, mariachi band, that's different. I always like a mariachi band, but not the folk singers or the cover bands. I want to opt in for that.
So a complex topic. I know we have lots of listeners who like puns. I know we have lots of listeners who like that they are dad jokes, that they're this fun way for you to relate. I am not talking about every pun. I'm talking about these specific circumstances. Ken, help me dig myself out of a hole.
No, because I this does it. If you think it applies to you and you're listening, it probably doesn't. Because if you're aware of it, then you're like Jen said, you're probably not the problem. The folks that aren't aware of it they're going to continue to be unaware of the problem. We're never here to take it for joy, but it's a serious thing for me. It starts with something as simply as a pun, and my alarm bells go up. So we're just sharing. This is what Other Center is about. We're pulling back the curtains. No hurt feelings needed, but this is a great question because it's one I have a lot of passion about.
Yep. Yeah. And so bottom line for me, there's a ton of wordplay I like. I particularly like it if it has any sort of emotional or cultural meaning or parody or satire to it. There's some just fun, innocent wordplay that I like because it's just silly. It's just you said something that's wrong, but it doesn't mean anything. There's some puns I don't like, and I'm fine with not liking them as long as nobody tries to physically actually elbow me in the ribs or, you know, emotionally elbow me in the ribs and demand I react a specific way. That's the thing that I don't like ultimately.
Yeah.
Jennifer, any final thoughts from you on puns and wordplay?
No, but now I'm going to be on the lookout for these people. I'm sure that, you know what? I'm sure that I have encountered them. I just didn't really realize it just because I found them so annoying that I just tuned them out and their wordplay and puns.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm sure that I have come across these people.
Yeah. You know what? I'll end on a positive note. My friend, comedian, musician, Mike Furman, phenomenal at wordplay. His mind just works like that, and he absolutely loves it. He loves puns. He loves every kind of wordplay. He has a live performance that he does to video, which is just this sort of a show-stopping thing. His song is just called Chicken Monkey Duck, and he, in this fun rhythm, sings the word chicken monkey duck in different orders, but it's perfectly timed to a video playing in the background of different images of chicken monkey duck, and it's like great comedic procession of images for chicken monkey duck. He's phenomenal. He does music that's for kids, for families, for all ages. I love Mike Furman. I love his jokes. If you like puns and wordplay, go Google Mike Furman and you will be delighted. Phirman, Mike Furman. All right, that is it. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
That's yes, that is it. That is it. Send your angry letters to us, Karen, at Twitter, ForceCenterPod. We're on Threads as well, ForceCenterPod, Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is ForceCenterPodcast, available on a lot of different spots. If you want to listen to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and the like, just search, you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Have my comedy EP being released shortly. Special edition available on Bandcamp. My website has all the information and upcoming comedy dates as well in New York City, Seattle, and beyond. No wordplay or puns in those acts. Maybe. I don't know. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
You can find my ridiculous puns and wordplay on TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138, YouTube and Instagram at Jennifer Landa.
And Joseph, take us home. You have stood strong with us here on puns and pranks and magic trick. Well, you know, I think you're a little more open to magic, but where can I find and follow you?
I like magic when I can opt into the performance.
When you can buy it.
If I was at a party and somebody was just like, I understand you're in the middle of a conversation, but I'm going to make a quarter come out of your ear, that I would need to be physically restrained. I decide.
You've met him, then. You've met him. All right.
Okay. Good to know. Yes, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw, where I will absolutely do wordplay. I won't personally do puns, but I might quietly enjoy some to myself. You can also find me this weekend in Portland, Oregon at the HP Lovecraft Film Festival, the short horror film I worked on with a bunch of amazing people. The Nightmare Adorable is having two screenings at the HP Lovecraft Film Festival, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, October 7th, and 7 p.m. on Sunday, October 8th. If you're interested, it's all over my social media. It's on my website at josephscrimshaw.com, or you can go to the festival's website and just Google H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. That is it for me.
That is it for Joseph. That is it for Jennifer. That is it for me and us here at Other Center. We'll see you again very soon. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.